This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, a very good morning to you in this cloudy Friday morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Philip C. And joining me in the studio today is Khoo Soo Chuang and Tan Chen Lee. It's exactly touching 7:06 in the morning on Friday, the 6th of May. Let's recap how global markets closed yesterday because they were extremely choppy, were they not?
Yeah, very happening in the US market. Dow down 3.1%, S&P 500 down 4%, and Nasdaq down 5%. Very painful over there. And Asian markets, Nikkei was closed. Hang Seng down 0.4%, Shanghai Composite up 0.7%, STI down 0.2%, FBM KLCI down 1.1%.
Well, that was a router in the US markets. 5% for Nasdaq, unprecedented. Now, for more on international markets, we have with us Tim Mulholland, president of TGM Limited. A very good morning to you, Tim. Help us understand, really, what is happening in equity markets. You know, within 2 days, there was a 900-point rally on the Dow, followed by a 1,000-point correction in less than 12 hours. Why the sudden reversal?
Well, these are, you know, violent markets. You know, you're getting an interest rate change. You know, you've had long end yields double. The Fed hasn't caught up yet. I think that, you know, there's a little oversold. I think what you saw yesterday and the fact that the Fed didn't go 75. But I think after digesting things, people realize, you know, the futures market's still looking for 3.25%, 3.5% funds. And the realization that the Fed is really, really behind the curve, which they are. No reason why they waited this long to even stop their bond buying. But nevertheless, I think they're behind the curve. I think the market knows it. And I think that they're hoping that that we don't have this inflation doesn't press real wages to the point where we get into a recession. So it's a very tough act for the Fed here. A lot of it of their own doing. But nevertheless, I think the market woke up to it. And I think that they're also going to probably put, in my opinion, more emphasis on the asset balance sheet reduction, because I think they're going to take it out of the height of the financial or asset prices. And I think you're seeing that. So I think this is the beginning of a bear market here. And let's face facts. We've gone up, what, from 2,200 in the S&P to 4,800 in the S&P in a year and a half. And now we're back down to 4,100. So in my view, it has hardly started.
Well, Tim, I mean, 4 years ago was the last time the market behaved in this way. And that prompted Jay Powell, the same Fed president, actually to reverse his stance on hawkish rates. Do you expect him to stay the course now, as you maybe alluded to?
He has no chance right now to do that, because at that point, a little different scenario. We didn't have the inflation. You know, they were still just trying to get ahead of a little bit of, you know, I think some of the tariffs and so forth that were coming on board, if that was going to raise in the heated economy. It's a whole different situation then. This is a weird, odd one, because this inflation is real. I can't believe that he said that the neutral rate he still thinks is 2.5%. I think that's pretty laughable, because it's a moving target. I guess I'll grant that. But, when inflation is running at the rate it's running, and even if it pulls back to 4%, and we're talking, what, 2.5%? Neutral rate? Give me a break.
So if we were to look at the 10-year Treasury yield, that is topping 3%. Is there any safe haven asset at the moment that we can look at?
Well, no, that's a very good question, because, you know, all asset prices, in these situations, correlations go to one, because what the Fed did when they supplied all this liquidity and basically stamped out volatility for all these years, you saw all asset prices rise. So I would say on a relative basis, you can look at the U.S. as the most expensive market to anywhere else in the world right now. And I think you also have to look at, some long short type activities. If you use hedging like options, as I do, the trick is managing theta decay. So it's very tricky right here. But I'd say that the safe haven right now would be something that you feel good long term. I think the worst place to be right now is in some of these stocks that have earnings projected in the future, because that's where I think you're going to suffer the most. So it's a very difficult situation. And I still like gold, by the way.
I mean, you talked about stocks and earnings. I mean, quarter one corporate results were pretty okay, I think. They were kind of in line with market expectations. But, you know, with this kind of risk-off climate, how would you allocate your portfolio now with respect to equities?
Well, you're looking at it right now, there's going to be this inflation that we have, whether we like it or not, is going to definitely, I think, impact firms' earnings. I think they're going to hit their margins. There's no way around that, I don't believe. I still favor the energy sector. You know, it's interesting. the cure for higher prices, the old adage in commodity markets is cure for higher prices is higher prices, because it would increase more production. But you can't really do that, I don't think, with energy right now. So I think energy is still a decent place to be, as evidenced. Refiners, I love. And all this is good, by the way, as long as we don't go into recession. In recession, I don't think there's anything that's any good. Maybe bonds will come back at that point. But, you know, again, I think that there's I am concerned about a recession. I do understand balance sheets of customers and so forth are good right now. But, you know, this is a different animal that very few people have ever had to witness in their careers. So I came to the tail end of the one in the I came into the market in 1981. So that was at the tail end of the last one. So I just think there's going to be a lot of trading here right now. And I think it's going to be a good trader's market. It's going to be rough for investors, especially passive.
Yeah, as much as that was said by some other fund managers quoted by Bloomberg, Tim, do you find it incongruous that central banks in developed countries, like even in the UK, which did raise by 25 bips last night, they're raising rates, they're hiking into a, you know, possibly a recessionary period? Do you find that incongruous?
You know, it is, except the fact is that, you know, if he's talking 2.5%, he's not even going to get to neutral. So that's where I think if they're going to raise rates the way people are afraid, and I don't think they will unless it's a massive emergency. That's what the market took comfort in yesterday, by the way. So unless it's a massive emergency, I don't think they will, because I don't think they want to tip this into recession. That's why I think you're going to see a little more aggressiveness on the balance sheet reduction, which I guess there's some equivalence to rate hikes and whatnot. So this is where I think asset prices in general will suffer, maybe hoping to save the real economy.
So if neutral cannot be 2.5% and 4% seems a little bit more realistic, that's a long way. How do you expect Fed rate policy to look like into the end of the year?
I say 50 basis points each meeting is what they'll do. I don't think they're going to go 75. I mean, unless there's a real alarming emergency. But I think 50 basis points, that's pretty darn aggressive. I've never seen a Fed go like that. But, of course, I've never really seen the Fed go from this low of interest rates either. So, you know, again, I think it's 50 bips. I just don't think they want to really rush. And they certainly, you know, if they jack up rates the way some call for to really arrest this inflation, that's going to cause a recession and that will get inflation out, I'm afraid. But, you know, we are looking at also a stagflationary situation as well right now. So that's a real tight line. And that's, I think, where you talk on the earnings. That's stagflation is where that's going to really challenge earnings, in my view.
So, Tim, we've talked a lot about monetary policy. Anything on the fiscal side we can do to kind of ensure we get a soft landing?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. You have the monetary spigot and the fiscal spigot both turned on full blast. I'd say the monetary one's the best one. They're not going to really do much on the fiscal side, it doesn't seem. But, you know, we do have a big, in November, you know, potentially, as the odds are that we're going to have a change in Congress. So maybe there'll be some fiscal tightness, which I don't think there's going to be much choice but for some fiscal tightness. And there's no room on the fiscal side. And this modern monetary policy, or MMT, is to me a total crock. And I think that's what you're I think this is what we're paying the price for right now, for those that believe in modern monetary theory. So anyway, that's my view.
All right. Let's shift the focus to the Chinese companies that's listed on the U.S. exchanges. So there's 80 more companies, including big names like JD.com, Bilibili, that has been added to the non-compliance list. Do you think the delisting of these stocks a real possibility, and what kind of material impact that would be?
Yeah, I do think there's a good chance of that. And, you know, unfortunately, I do notice there's this anti-China sentiment here, you know, especially with the goings on in Ukraine and the idea that China is, you know, backing Russia and so forth, in addition to other, you know, tensions that have been mounting. So I think there's a pretty good chance of that. And I think a lot of American investors have really cooled on China anyway. I tend to think that China is still an opportunity. I know it's been bludgeoned pretty bad with this zero COVID policy, which I don't get, but I think it's good. And I quite frankly, I think, who cares about the ADR and GDRs? I'd rather do the A shares or H shares in China. But I think China still is a good story, good domestic story. I think they'll get through this. And, you know, I do think there's a good chance they'll be delisted here in the U.S. But it's not going to change my thinking one bit on China.
Mm. Well, thank you very much, Tim, for your insights. That was Tim Mulholland, president of TGM Limited. I think painting relatively a quite bleak picture about the state of current affairs at U.S. markets, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, man. Where do you go, right?
Pretty was an understatement.
He talked about how he entered the markets in 1981. Some fund managers quoted on Bloomberg and CNBC, they've been watching the market since the 70s, right? They've got no precedent. They don't have any previous experience in dealing with this issue. Now, it's quite insane.
Yeah, and you talked about yesterday this Volcker-esque approach towards rate hikes, but unlikely to take place. And where Tim also was mentioning that they have no choice but to take that structured 50 basis points move, right, for every upcoming meeting. But how many meetings will that be, and what is the neutral rate that we talk about?
Yeah, Paul Volcker raised US rates to somewhere in the 20s, I think low 20s in the 70s. I don't think we get there, right?
Yeah,
but inflation is running 8.5%, 4% neutral. Yeah, maybe that at its least, you know.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what Powell is trying to do to avoid a Paul Volcker kind of move and impact to the market. But exactly how is he being aggressive enough? You know, that's always the question.
Yes.
That is what is also causing all this reaction in the market, because
yeah,
he's so dovish in a way. He's not aggressive enough. That's causing this.
They've got no choice. I mean, we've been enjoying this wave of basically sugar rush for the last, 14 years. This is the market's paying the price. Look at the S&P 2017, right? In 2017, the S&P was at 2,300, 2,400. Today, until recently, it was nearly 5,000.
Well, it's akin to getting diabetes and requiring your insulin shots, isn't
it? You got to take your meds eventually.
Yeah, well, you know, although Tim did say that one kind of bright spark was oil and gas counters and sectors, he did say that energy stocks were likely to do quite well. And that was reflected yesterday as we saw all giant Shell report its highest quarterly profits since 2008 on soaring commodity prices. Yeah, fueling calls for a one-off windfall tax on oil and gas companies to help UK households with spiraling energy bills. So Shell posted an adjusted earnings of $9.1 billion for its 2022 first quarter results, in line with US expectations.
And that's fueling calls for a one-off windfall tax on oil and gas companies to help UK households with spiraling energy bills. And Shell posted adjusted earnings of $9.1 billion for its 2022 first quarter results, in line with analyst expectations. And that is compared to $3.2 billion over the same period a year earlier, and $6.4 billion from the fourth quarter of 2021.
Yeah, so good news, because Shell shareholders can look forward to a raise in dividends by around 4% to 25 cents per share for the first quarter. And I mean, there's bumper profits all across the industry, right? Despite the fact that there's been write-downs from exiting Russia.
Yeah, you know, this was a very different conversation to a year ago, isn't it, in terms of oil and gas stocks. Even UK rival BP was planning to do share buybacks as its first quarter net profit jumped. Even France's Total Energy, Norway's Equinor, you know, across the board, all are enjoying commodity prices. And perhaps that's one slight bright spark in the overall very much turbulent equity market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.